Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2015, number 3. Greetings, Husker Nation, and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Justice. Good to have you along. But the man you are really here to listen to is the smartest man on the face of the earth. And we say that every single week because he has earned that distinction as the smartest football player ever to come out of the University of Nebraska. Okay, that might be a little bit of a stretch, but he was an academic.
Oh, you're backing off on that now?
No, I'm not going to back off on that.
And I was only the smartest at Nebraska. I mean, it's... So, I mean, so what you're saying is that there's Iowa State Cyclones out there smarter than me.
No, I don't think so. What'd you get, the second highest score ever on the Wunderlich when you were getting ready for the NFL draft?
You know, you've actually got a point there because I believe it was actually John Hess from Lincoln Southeast and was an all-conference player for Nebraska who actually scored a perfect score.
And you only missed one on the Wunderlich?
It's not that I missed it. I ran out of time and didn't answer the last question. John answered the last question.
Of course, I am talking to the one, the only, former Husker Academic All-American, 1994 Big 8 Athlete of the Year. It's Dr. Rob Zadiska, and this is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Of course, the Remington Trophy presentation coming up on January 16th, 2016 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For tickets, just go to remingtontrophy.com and a proud presenting sponsor, the Husker Doc Talk Podcast for the third year in a row. And back with us again this year is the Benson Brewery. And as is customary during the Doc Talk Podcast, we are drinking beer from the Benson Brewery. We have a growler this week of the Benson Blonde. Now, this is an American Blonde Ale. It's they say it's easily drinkable. It's crisp. It's got a alcohol by volume of 5.4%. Easy drinking. Smooth.
Okay.
Without any bitterness.
Can I throw something in here?
Sure.
Have you had a beer from the Benson Brewery that's not easy to drink?
Here's the answer to that is no, but I know what to stay away from. And it's not that their beers are bad. I'm not an IPA guy. So I'm not a big hops guy. So I avoid hops.
Which I've had a couple of the beers they've had up there that are a little heavier in the hop character.
Yes.
They're tasty beers.
See, you're more of an IPA guy.
I like a little of everything. I love a sour. They've had sours up there that I'm yet to taste. I love a good sour ale.
So this week we're going to go with the blonde, and next week we'll probably go with the amber with a redhead, and the week after that we'll go with a nice brunette. So we'll have the gamut of women comes to beer.
There's a theme. There's a theme here.
But we have the growler, and I, full disclosure here, Benson Brewery has raised their prices on the growler. I found that out tonight. It's gone from $8 to $11, but still, you're getting...
That's still a pretty good deal. It's cheaper than getting the bucket of beer at the bar.
And that is on the refill. So your first growler is going to cost you $16. You're going to keep the bottle. You go back and get the refill for $11, and trust me, when you see how many beers you get out of a growler, it's very much worth it. Now, Rob...
I get one large one out of the growler.
You can drink that whole thing... You don't even need my help drinking this thing.
There might be a little bit of truth to that. I'm not saying I should or I could, but I will.
If Rob and I are slurring our speech by the end of this podcast, you're going to know the reason why. It's because of the Benson Blonde. So blame the blonde if we start slurring our speech. I tell you what, there are a lot of Husker beat writers who are slurring their speech or dropping F-bombs, S-bombs, and everything else because of the breaking news that happened today with a beat reporter out of the Portland, Oregon newspaper that has gotten what we think is pretty much unprecedented access to the Nebraska football team.
I mean, in this day and age with social media, this is almost old news, and this just came out this afternoon. I can't think of any time that a reporter has had this kind of behind-the-scenes access. Now, I'm not commenting yet that this is good, this is bad. I find it ungodly interesting because it used to be, you know, you go back 30, 40 years ago and unprecedented access was you'd go down to the Tam O'Shanter Lounge, or not even sure I'm saying Tam O'Shanter Lounge. There we go. I've got to enunciate my Irish lounges in Lincoln and hang out and have some beers with Charlie McBride and Milt Tenneper after practice. And that was considered incredibly close contact with Nebraska football coaches. This is inside the meeting room. I mean, it kind of I'm almost shocked, and not so much at the information that this reporter has put out there, which I find highly interesting, but the fact that the guy was even let into the meeting.
You know, let me play, you know, if I was still a part of the regular Omaha media, which I was for 20 years of my life, I would be pissed off right now. I would be up in arms. You and I would be on Sound Off, going off on Mike Riley. You'd probably be defending him. I'd be ripping into him because I was denied that sort of access. Now that I've been able to back up and punt, should we say, and take a larger look at the program as a whole and maybe what Mike Riley's doing here, let me play devil's advocate and try to calm my former media brethren down. And that is, we've all heard how nice of a guy that Mike Riley is. And by all accounts, he's super nice, maybe too nice in some counts. You know, here's a classic case where Carrie Eggers is the reporter from the Portland newspaper. You probably have a very long relationship with this person.
And that's, I think, a lot of this is the fact that apparently these guys do have a very good, very strong pre-existing relationship.
So you have that relationship, and you realize, listen, this isn't going to be a go-get-ya piece. That could be you have a relationship. They want to see they've known you for so long. They've wanted to see you in this type of atmosphere, and this is the best way to grant that. Now, you can't grant that to the Omaha World Herald without pissing off the Lincoln Journal Star. You can't grant that to the Lincoln Journal Star without pissing off the Omaha World Herald. The easy way is to go, you know what? This guy, I'm going to see Kelly or Carrie Eggers once this year. I'm going to let him see what I do and the way our coaches work. And it's better that they write the story than anybody local, because I'm not going to make anybody mad in Portland. I don't have to worry about stepping on anybody's toes there. I don't think he stepped on anybody's toes here. I think he kept it pretty even, because then you don't have every newspaper, every television station pissed off that they weren't granted access to a meeting room.
Well, guess who's probably a little ticked off right now is every newspaper reporter, magazine reporter, and TV station.
You know why? Because they didn't get the story they've always wanted.
Exactly, which, you know, to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, here's a question I'm not sure anybody's asked yet. Has anybody asked for this kind of access, or was Eggers just the first person to come forward and say, you know what, the worst that's going to happen is I'm going to be told no, and he just put this out there and said, hey, would you let me sit in on a team, on not a team meeting, a coach's meeting?
Now, the person who's going to take the brunt of the punishment here is going to be Keith Mann, the sports information director, because most interview requests go through Keith. He's the one that says yay or nay. And going back to the days, and you remember Chris Anderson, when she was the sports information director, then it went to Keith. I think those guys have always been fair when it comes to media, especially locally.
I think they try as hard as they can to be fair.
But when you have a head coach that comes to you and says, listen, I'm good friends with Carrie Eggers. I'm going to let this person do this.
Well,
you can't tell a guy no.
I don't even know if this is a case of, I mean, is it possible this never even went through the sports media office?
Oh, if that's the case, that's a mistrust. It has to go. If you don't at least tell your sports information department what's going on, they can't do damage control. I would have a hard time believing that Keith Mann and his staff was not informed that this thing was going to take place. Because if Keith picked up or went online and saw the Portland newspaper today and said, where did this come from? I have no idea how this happened. That builds a mistrust between coach and sports information director, where those two have to be working hand in hand.
And I can see that happening, and I understand your point. And I guess my problem with it is that I kind of wonder what's going through Keith's head. And I know Keith. Keith was working down in that department when I was playing down there. This is a guy who's highly experienced. He's been there for, well, literally at this point, probably 25 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. Nebraska football is a very big fish in a small pond. When you look at it from the media standpoint here in Nebraska, everybody knows who these people are. You don't have to drop too many hints to kind of start figuring things out a little bit. Now, some of this information that got released, they commented on a freshman linebacker who in this article in the Portland Tribune was described as a high-maintenance kid, high-maintenance freshman, high-risk to transfer, leave school if he doesn't get his way, if he doesn't get playing time. This is a kid who apparently wants to play right away. And apparently this came up in conversation between the defensive coaches and Riley, in the sense that, hey, if they're in consensus agreement that this kid could potentially be a valuable contributor in any way, they should probably go ahead and try and find a spot for him on, say, at least a two or three of the special teams. And the reason this is important is because they describe it as a high-maintenance freshman linebacker. Well, if it's a kid who's at risk for transfer, that probably means he hasn't redshirted yet, which also means he's probably a true freshman. If he's a high-maintenance kid and they're really worried about keeping this kid, that also means that he was probably a scholarship recruit this year, which you get on the list of scholarship recruits and you start looking, well, okay, that guy's a wide receiver, athlete, offense. Oh, here we go. You got Muhammad Berry on going down the list. You got the Davis brothers. You got the other Davis kid from Florida. Oh, here we go. Tyron Ferguson, another outside linebacker. So all of a sudden, you're looking here, and you've only got so many. Basically, I mean, unless I'm blind, you've basically got two linebackers in the scholarship class. It doesn't, I mean, I'm not exactly an investigative reporter here. Took me all of about 30 seconds of looking at this list to figure out, okay, well, Ferguson or Berry apparently is a pretty high maintenance kid who's at risk for wanting to transfer.
Well, and that's where a story like this can do damage, in the fact that players are going to read this and going, hold on.
This is going to be a trust issue between the players and the coaches, and it's going to be a trust issue within the players themselves. They're going to be looking across the locker room going, great, Muhammad or Tyron's a greedy playing time bastard who, if they don't get their way, they're going to transfer. And apparently this is now a legitimate thing we can hold over the coaching staff if we don't feel like we're getting our way. This is a locker room rift type of situation, and it's a situation that can build mistrust and a rift between the players and the coaching staff.
Of course, if you like what Dr. Rob is saying, you can follow him all week long. He's very active on Twitter. You can follow him at DocTalkSports. And don't forget to visit HuskerMax.com on a regular basis. They produce unbelievable content on the Huskers and share content daily. That's HuskerMax.com, a proud distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast as well. You bring that up, and that's where I see the negative. I took Mike Riley's side to beginning to understand why he would let a reporter in a meeting like this.
And I can see the positives but
what you just described, it can lead to a very negative effect when it comes to trust between players and coaches.
And here's the thing. I'm looking at whoever this kid is, this linebacker is, because I guarantee you, once this article hit, once people read it, I guarantee you every player on the Nebraska football team knew exactly who this linebacker was. Every single player knows who this guy was talking about. And all of a sudden now, this guy will never, ever be viewed in the same way again by his teammates.
Did you have a player like that you never viewed the same, that was so arrogant that you thought he got special treatment that you never looked at him the same?
There were guys that – I'm trying to think of a way to phrase it. You know, I heard a great line that most good coaches, they may not treat everybody the same, but they're going to treat everybody fairly. There's guys who are better than other guys. There are players who are better than other players. There are players who are going to take you farther on the football field than other players. Are those guys going to get due consideration? You bet they are. So those guys are going to get second and third chances where somebody else may not get second and third chances. Those players are going to get it's not even going to be favors, but are they going to be treated differently? Yes, they are. Is that unfair? No, it's not necessarily.
That's reality. That's life.
Yeah, it's not necessary. It's not unfair at all. People who are better at something tend to get farther ahead than people who aren't as good at a given thing. And that's perfectly normal. But what this reporter is putting out there is that there's a kid here who may or may not be on par with some other players, and he's going to get due consideration, and he's going to get a favorable treatment, not because he's better. He's going to get favorable treatment because if he gets pissed and pouty, he's going to up and transfer. That's not fair.
So,
I mean,
all the information that came out of the article, from the suspensions to the injuries, this is probably the most damning thing that could be divisive amongst the team.
I think that was probably the most divisive. The five-player suspension, which, like I said, if you've read the article, one of the other breaking points of this article is, you know, everybody's been talking about the players who've been suspended from BYU, which one of their star pass-rushing linebackers, Taki Taki, that's how it's spelled, T-A-K-I-T-A-K-I, linebacker Taki Taki, who's apparently one of their two best pass rushers, according to Bronco Mendenhall, was announced today that he's suspended for petty theft of apparently like some soccer and track jerseys or something. But everybody's been talking about all these BYU players stemming from the fight in their bowl game, as well as some of these other incidents more recently that are suspended from the Nebraska game. Now all of a sudden we learned from Kerry Eggers that there's five Nebraska players suspended as well for the BYU game, including one defensive starter. Again, it's one of these things where it might take a little bit of doing, of shuffling through anything ranging from police and academic reports to just casual conversations with players. But at some point, people will know who these five players are, especially the defensive starter, without too much effort.
So Mike Riley's had an unbelievable honeymoon. He's been treated like gold from the local media. Which is usually standard. With Bill Callahan was treated like gold early on. Bo Pelini was given the red carpet treatment early on.
Bo got about 2 years of red carpet.
Does this end the honeymoon now? Do guys like Dirk Chatelain, Tom Chattel, Steve Sipple, the heavy hitters and the columnists go after, put the gloves down now?
Truthfully, I really don't think they do. And now here's the reason why. I mean, you look at it. I think Sam McEwen had an article the other day in the World Herald that it wasn't necessarily, I mean, it wasn't like he was out to denigrate Mike Riley, but essentially he said, hey, you know what, the optimists in the world out there, which I got to be honest, I'm one of them, are sitting here looking at Nebraska saying, hey, these guys legitimately got a shot to pull an 8 or 9 win season, which I think most people who follow Nebraska football would say, that's maybe a little bit optimistic, and I'd love to see that happen. McEwen kind of shot that down. He said, you know what, this first season, from what he's seen in practice in terms of the lack of timing, players trying to adjust to new systems, they might have a little bit of a rougher go of it. So I don't know if the gloves, I think in terms of saying, oh, everything's all bright and golden in Lincoln, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a little bit of mistrust. But on the flip side, I can sit here and criticize Riley for letting this reporter in, because the type of information this reporter put out can and I think will be damaging to a degree.
Well, it's usually you say, okay, if you're going to sit in a meeting, this portion's off the record. I have no problem with letting a reporter in and say, listen, you can't, this conversation is off the record because it's sensitive.
This and this, you don't talk.
Yeah. I mean, I guarantee there are plenty of reporters, whether television or newspaper-wise, go to these meetings under the understanding they can't report anything. But it's able to get a feel of what it's like in the meeting room. That does not surprise me. It has happened. I know it has happened. The level of reporting here is pretty extensive in the fact that it doesn't seem like too much was off the record with him.
And that's the thing that I find surprising here. I don't think gloves are coming off and people are going to come after Riley, because I think at the end of the day, most people are going to look at this and go, you know what? This guy was trying to grant access to a friend of his. I don't know if I should call him a friend of his, but he was trying to grant
access. There's no way you would let somebody like this into the room if you weren't a friend. And the truth is, over time,
it was a reporter that he had likely a long-standing, very good relationship with.
Over time, coaches and reporters, believe it or not, can become friends. When you're with
no.
especially in that small of a town, like Corvallis, Oregon, you develop relationships and you build a trust factor. I mean, Bob.
And I get that. And honestly, I think a lot of the local people, once some of the furor here dies down over this, are going to look at that.
I think more people, the only people that heard of the local media. No fans should be upset, but fans should be going, all right, I just learned a lot of information.
From a fan standpoint,
you learn more in that article.
This was so interesting to read.
Yes.
This.
I mean,
he even went into recruiting and what he was seeing on The Office. I mean, I call it looking at the big board on the office wall. I don't know if that's truly what this reporter's looking at. But he had incredible access into something that, you know, I got to be honest with you, it was rare that I got to walk past the coaches when I was down in Lincoln. Osborne and the coaching staff had sort of a central coaching room that players rarely were in.
It was the man cave.
It wasn't. It wasn't like there was yellow tape across it and we weren't allowed in there. We just didn't go in there that much. But I got to be honest, I don't think I really liked going in there, because when you went in there, they had the depth chart set up. They had a big board on the wall.
Damn, I fell.
I'm not sure that really made me all that chapped my hide too much. I started some games as a freshman.
But you brought up a good point, is that
we kind of knew who all the starters were at that
From a
time,
fan but. Standpoint, you are craving reporting that you saw from the Portland newspaper.
From an information standpoint, as a fan, this is a gold mine.
Yeah.
And now the thing I kind of feel bad about, after a little bit of this, what the heck? Why did this guy get this kind of access? This is probably a one-time thing.
Yeah, and that's what it was. It's a one-time thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get this kind of information again for a while.
No.
Or at least information that comes from this in-depth of access.
And that's why, if I was still a working media member of the Omaha Press, I would be upset about this. But now I sit back and go, okay, I understand why you do it. And from fans should not be upset, because it doesn't matter who writes the story, that you got good information from injuries to suspensions to players' attitudes to recruiting. I mean, it was a grand slam of articles.
It was. And if anything that I kind of feel bad about, this is the kind of information that a local person would love to have. I mean, this would be, I hate, it's not a career making one, but this would have, you would be getting the gold star from your boss and have free reign for 2 or 3 weeks after.
Do you think Mike Riley apologizes to reporters? He shouldn't. He shouldn't.
You know, I don't think he apologizes, but I bet he explains it.
Probably.
You know, here's the other thing. I think if you're a local reporter after this happened, and you're smart, I think this is your opportunity to call up Keith Mann, if you still got Chris Anderson's cell phone number on your Rolodex. You call Chris up, you call up Keith, you call up somebody like that and say, hey, listen, this guy got some great information. He's from Portland, Oregon, of all places, for God's sakes. Listen, I want to do something. I want to maintain a friendly relationship. I don't want to piss anybody off. Give me some similar access. One time, let me have the same kind of access. I'm not going to...
But you can't do it for everybody. You can't.
But I think if you're smart, you call them up and say, listen, I promise I'm going to be good. I will send you the article before it runs.
Reporter would ever do that.
I'm just saying, get do that, and you could maybe you too could have this kind of access.
Yeah, but no journalist is ever going to say, "Hey, I'm going to run the story by you to edit." I mean, that's against every journalism school that you've gone to.
Yeah, but it's also stupid journalism egos, in my opinion.
Look at you just another beer.
Do you know what this is?
Good.
That is a tasty beer from the Benson Brewery. I'm just saying, here's my thing. Go ahead, bend the rules, because this was rules being bent here. This was not normal coverage. This is not what football coaches do. This is not what reporters normally have access to. The rules are bent. They're bent. They're broken. It's a brave new world, Travis. do what it takes to get this kind of access. Fans would love it. You know what? Even if we don't know that there's a pouty freshman linebacker who's threatening to transfer, even if we don't know that there's five players suspended for the BYU game, you know what? Having this kind of access, having this kind of insight, and being able to report on just at least a portion of it, that's unprecedented. Go ahead, break the rules that they taught you in journalism school.
Don't you think deep down Mike Riley knew he would ruffle some feathers by letting this guy in these meetings? Deep down, he had to. He couldn't have been that naive to go, you know, when the stories come out, I'm going to take some heat.
I really don't think he is, because I think everybody looks at Riley as such a gosh darn aw shucks guy. I think this guy is so insanely smart. It's
calculated. It's very calculated.
I think everything this guy does is calculated to a degree. And I mean, all the people I know who know the guy, who've met the guy, and like I said, I'm not saying I got buddies who have been his assistant coaches up at Oregon State or at the San Diego Chargers, but I know a few guys who know him through the coaching ranks. And the one thing they have said about him, and this has been said about Riley before, is, you know what, at some point you need to forget the nice guy image. And this guy, he is smart, he is intelligent, and he is a fierce, fierce competitor. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's certain aspects of him having this reporter come in and do this. It's calculating on some respect. It's manipulative on some respect. Now, I'm not saying the guy's a manipulator, but I think he's doing this because maybe there are some buttons, and I don't know what these buttons are, but maybe there are some buttons he's trying to push with the local media.
Dr. Rob Zadiska, you can follow him on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Don't forget the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, just 155 days away from today, which is Thursday. What is it, the 13th or 14th?
Today is Thursday the 13th.
The 13th. So it's 155 days from today, the 13th of August. And it's coming up at the Rococo Theater January 16th. Cocktails at 6:30. Dinner and program at 7:30. You don't want to miss it. It's a great time. It's the Remington Trophy presentation. So we got a week of practice in the books for the Big Red. Just from what you've been able to bring in knowledge-wise, typical first week. I watched Mike Riley on the Big Ten Network the other day. Talked about really those first 6 days was massive amount of learning, getting the program in, getting the plays in, and then after that it's pretty much repetition. Is it that much? Is it get everything in 6 days and then repeat?
It is, and I got to be honest, I kind of like that because that's how Osborne did it. There was you got a massive amount of information, and then you just went through it over and over and over again. There's not a lot of – it's hard to have a lot of technique and skill work in this session because they have a number of days where minimal, if any, contact, helmets only. And so it's hard to get a lot of that fundamental practice in. And so a lot of this is it's conditioning and it's mental. And that's something that I think it's still important. We probably had less of this when I went through, and you're looking at it from 25 years ago. I think those, in terms of how much hitting and how much physical contact they have, is less now than it was when I was going through the process. It's a relevant point because, again, it makes it much more of a mental game for this first week than it used to be. I mean, we were doing a lot of hitting, a lot of fundamental work early on as freshmen. When we first hit the door down there, and I don't know if they do that as much now. I know they have a little bit less contact than we did, so it tends to be, like I said, less fundamentals, less contact, a lot more on the mental side. It's hard to say. I mean, the biggest thing that I worry about now from what I've seen thus far, and you talk to the reporters and you see what they're saying, the biggest news out of Lincoln is the fact that it's still new systems that are going in. That they had, you can talk about having, well, they've already had a month of spring ball. Well, they had 15 practices. They do 15 practices over a month. It's hard to get a system down in 15 practices. So they've essentially had 1 week of two-a-days coming into this fall, the equivalent thereof. And it's hard to get a lot out of that in terms of nailing down some of the starters' roles. You look at the offensive line, there's still a lot of positions up for grab at that spot. I think defensive line's reasonably set. Linebacker's still an area that I think is getting sorted out. You got guys like Manderis and Rose Ivy, but after that, you've got kind of a depleted position group. So there's some of these spots on the team where they're going to have to find personnel. They're going to have to find who the starters are, and you're going to have to get those guys a lot of reps. You're going to have to find a good, solid second string, essentially. You're going to have to get those guys a lot of reps. I don't know if they have that yet, and it's hard to do when you're putting in new systems. And that's the problem when you're going into a fall with a new coaching staff like this. Even though they've had a spring practice to work through, it highlights the mental aspect of it. When you're not having full pads yet. So a lot of brain work here this first week. Going to be a lot more fundamentals over the next week or two.
And over the next week or two, we'll be able to recap that because we're doing a podcast each and every week all the way through the bowl game. If you like today's podcast, share it with your friends. Don't forget you can also follow us on iTunes or subscribe to this podcast on Podbean. The great thing is, once we post a new one, it goes right to your phone. We want to thank Mr. Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy for presenting this podcast. Don't forget about the Remington Trophy presentation and go to remingtontrophy.com for more information. Big thanks to the Benson Brewery at 6059 Maple Street. Drink good beer. Drink beer from the Benson Brewery.
Great and our food, too.
And great food. And our beer this week, of course, is the Benson Blonde. And for daily Husker news, get all you need at HuskerMax.com. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. Talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.